communities, and so I'm hoping that we can engage each other in a little bit of a dialogue. You know my bio, but I just wanted to touch really briefly on how we come to study. This was for my grad studies to do a study on hospitality. It's a bit of a lost art in the church, and especially in, you know, as we talk about, we have all sorts of programs for evangelism and discipleship and so on, but it was such a very simple thing through the early church or life, just that the early church was very much a home church. And evangelism was done not through programs, but through the home. And so I wanted to just plumb that a little bit, but that stemmed from a little video we saw about a Czech widow who had lived through, I think, three communist regimes. She had stayed in her country while hundreds of others fled. Most of the Christians fled. But her heart was to have an embassy for the kingdom of heaven in her home. And so she actually had a little bronze plaque outside of her house. And if you wanted prayer or if you wanted to just interact with a Christian, her home was open. And we watched this video, and it was just a fascinating little picture into what hospitality was. And so we got to wrestle with this whole idea of what is hospitality and how does it impact our faith and then the life of our communities and so on. And so that's a little bit about where we're coming from. But let's start just by having you at your tables. I want you to brainstorm with each other a definition of hospitality. I'm not going to do all the work for you. Okay, so you're going to have to do this yourself. I'm curious what your idea of a definition of what is hospitality. So on your mark, you got papers and a pen, brainstorm ideas, words that help define it. Try to come up with a simple definition of what hospitality is, okay? I want to know where your brains are at, first of all. And you have 3.5 minutes. So 3.5 minutes. Is it too far up and down, or are we good?
No,
we're good? Okay. Oh, no, it's fine. You got 1 minute and 47 seconds now. All right, let's work together here a little bit. I want to hear, how many of you have the word welcome on your paper? Welcome or welcoming? Most of you do. How many of you have food? Yeah, there's got to be snacks. Or FOSPA, right? There's got to be FOSPA. What else? What other words do you have or ways of defining hospitality?
Active.
Active?
Active.
Okay, interesting.
Listening.
Listening?
Okay,
good.
Having your heart open to people that come to your house.
Okay, having your heart and your home open. I like that. We did well. We got all these. There's not a gold star, so. I mean, yay, good job. Good job. Anyone else? What else?
Like regardless of circumstances, right?
So oh, okay.
And a non-judgmental.
We use the word inclusive.
Inclusive. Oh, very modern. Very modern. Inclusive. Okay. We got the backbenchers back there who aren't going to share anything all day. You're just here for the coffee and lunch. I know, I know. Let's the biblical definition of hospitality, the word, the Greek word that's used is only used actually in the New Testament, which is interesting, and then it's modeled in the Old Testament. So the Greek word is, not even going to try to pronounce it, but all it means is love for strangers. Love for strangers. And so when you look at hospitality, most of us have this idea of, well, it's all the farm couples from the community getting together. We have that idea, especially in a rural community, because most of the people that you interact with are people that you know and have known. So here's another question. Debate this among yourselves. Are rural or urban people more hospitable?
No debate.
No debate. Love it. Love it. Okay. Amongst yourselves, don't argue with me. I'm curious to hear, are urban or rural people more hospitable? With that definition in mind, love for strangers, are urban or rural people more hospitable? Pardon? That's fair. I'm just asking for your thoughts. I know you haven't done conclusive research. Just give your thoughts. So let's do a show of hands. Who's been able to convince everybody that rural people are way more hospitable than urban people? It's not a competition. Who thinks Mennonites are the most hospitable people? The reason I wanted to talk about this is because sometimes we get this idea that that the rural is automatically more hospitable. We're doing it all well. And I'm not here to tear you down and tell you you're not, but there's an element to hospitality that needs to go a step further maybe than what you have grown accustomed to as hospitality, if that makes sense. So we have adopted hospitality as just the interaction with one another, the practicing of church life and community life with one another. But sometimes in rural situations, a newcomer has a really hard time breaking into that. So somebody who is new that comes into the community that didn't grow up there or doesn't have five generations actually might find it really difficult. It's not that they're unloved, but they're not accepted into it in the same way. And so in urban centers, for instance, in the city, where there's lots of different cultural experiences and all sorts of different people coming and going, it's much more transient, it becomes much more natural then to interact with newcomers, and there's programs and things that are established in the church for newcomers to make sure that they're feeling welcome. But the problem is in both, they both have a problem that maybe that welcome in urban centers has a hard time going deeper, where the rural might have an opportunity to take this hospitality and create a depth in the community that isn't there in urban centers. So there's both strengths and weaknesses in both, we're going to address some of those, but I want to come back to our definition really quickly before we go on, because we need to understand love for strangers. We have two things we have to try to define. First of all, who's a stranger?
Me.
You are, okay? Why do you consider yourself a stranger?
I'm stranger than everybody else.
Okay. Good. Agreed. No. don't know you at all. Yeah. How would we define who a stranger is?
Often we don't know.
Interesting. Anyone else? Anyone who's not me? I don't know. Could it just be anyone else? Someone I don't know? How much do I have to know them before they're not a stranger? Then would be my next question.
You didn't look up the Greek for what a stranger is.
I don't know that that's helpful here for actually a unique reason. And we're going to talk throughout the weekend, and it's primarily on Sunday morning. I want to talk to you about the hospitality of God. Because this is a biblical concept that while we were strangers, exiled from God, enemies of God, God made a way to bring us in. And this is the picture that we have. So not only, though, I think we have to be careful not to just to define a stranger as someone who's not a Christian, but a stranger is an outsider, someone that is not part of the regular collection or group. So let's think of it in that way. You likely have a church family, a recognizable church family, people that you interact with week to week and so on. And then you also have your own family. And so in talking about hospitality, I'm not saying that hospitality is only what we do for the stranger or someone that is not part of your circle or part of your group, but it is the extension of your church family and your home family that needs to go a step further to people that you don't know and aren't part of that. Does that make sense? So the stranger is love for the stranger. Hospitality extends body life and love for one another. The whole New Testament is full of all these one another statements. You know, love one another, greet one another with a holy kiss, and you don't do that, I know that. You know, all the one another's, how to care for one another in the church and in the body. We learn to be hospitable in the sense that now I have to take this life that I've come to experience when somebody comes to my farm and we talk together, we pray together. How do I extend that to somebody who is not part of my circle? That's where hospitality comes in. And so it's interesting when we read many of the passages which we're going to focus on today, it's going to talk in the same passages about loving each other in the body, but then it's going to say, and practice hospitality. So it's saying, take this to the next level in extending this. And so the early church began to do that, and that's how the gospel spread. But I want to be careful to be clear that hospitality is not just an evangelism tool. Okay, it's not just something that you use to accomplish a task. If we do that, we ignore the first part of the definition, love. Because we're actually using people or using something to get something from that person. That no longer becomes love. So we're going to talk about that in just a second. But I want to talk about one of the other reasons why it's important to have the first two steps before we get to the stranger actually intact first. So let's say you had kids at home, and every time you had guests over, you broke out the good pie, the good china, everything was better when you had guests over. And your kids, what are your kids likely going to say?
We actually get to
eat
today?
Yeah, we get to eat more than just the scraps? Wow, we get pie? Do I get a piece?
In our house it was, oh, you put fresh butter out.
Yes. Now, there's nothing wrong with holding your best for others, okay? Don't take this the wrong way. But love within the home has to be intact first. Otherwise, what we're going to create is a generational drift. One of the reasons that hospitality sometimes does not continue from one generation to the other is because they saw it as a one-off thing. They didn't feel that it was a part of everyday life, even in their own home, to begin with. Now, I say this carefully, but we don't want to create something where other people are treated better than your own kids. Does that make sense? So we learn to love, we learn to share with one another, we learn what love looks like in the home first, because we can be pretty hypocritical as parents sometimes. That we're going to put on our best face, everyone behave, there's guests coming over. You know, well, I have to be different. Every kid has to be different when so-and-so comes over because mom and dad don't want to look bad. And all of a sudden, it starts to create resentment. Well, why do they love them more than me? Why do they get pie and I don't? Why do they, you know, why do we get to do this only when guests come over? On top of that, then, the church becomes another avenue where we put into practice the idea of hospitality. So how do we show love to each other? It's practiced in meeting in each other's homes, in extending love to one another, and praying for each other, and enjoying company with each other. And that's where we learn and we practice true hospitality that then is extended to the stranger. So we're going to look at some of those one another's really quickly, but I'm going to say the church is a training ground for hospitality. I'm wondering, I think this group would probably be in that category, correct? That this, you're training, you guys are hospitable to one another, but it's taking it to the next level that's a challenge. Am I correct, or tell me I'm wrong? Anyone want to argue? Because I'm okay with argument. I'm not quite here to cause church splits, but I'm actually here to cause discussion. Okay, I want you to discuss. Are you in a place where you're good? You like being together as a church. You enjoy being in each other's homes. You care for one another. You're meeting each other's needs. When something goes wrong, there's people there. Yeah? There? Good. Now, in the practice of that, you've learned to do that with each other. How about the people that aren't in your sphere or in your circle? How do we take that to the next level is what we're going to look at today. So we've defined stranger and long way around. Let's look at love. What's love like? What kind of love are we supposed to extend to the stranger? Give me some biblical pictures. What's love like?
Compassion.
Compassion? Good.
Non-judgmental.
Okay. What does that mean?
Sacrificial.
Okay, sacrificial.
Generous.
I like that. Yep.
All acts that seek the best of the other.
Okay. They seek the best for the other. I like that. Seeking not your own interest, but the interest of others. Going back to Philippians. Really good. Okay. Where in the Bible do we get a glimpse into what love looks like?
Jesus loved you so much. He died on the cross for us.
Pardon me?
God.
Okay. Jesus on the cross. Good. We get the Good Samaritan. That's an interesting picture. Yeah. We actually get a picture of what, well, who's my neighbor? Is what they asked Jesus, right? It's almost the same question. Well, who's a stranger? Who am I supposed to love that way? And so, yeah, good. Where else in the Bible, the love chapter, for instance? Where do we find that one?
1 Corinthians 13.
Very good, very good. So we get a picture there. Love is patient and kind. It keeps no records of wrongs and all these different pictures of love. That's good. Would you go with me to Romans 12 quickly? In a passage on hospitality, it's going to give us this picture. So let me ask the question in a little bit different way. What should brotherly love within the church look like? How should we be caring for each other in the church, in this sphere? How should we be caring for each other? Romans chapter 12, and we're going to start in verse 9. But how, brainstorm with me for a second, how should brotherly love look within the church, sisterly and brotherly love within the church? Pardon?
Sincere,
according to this one. So let love be sincere. This is the reason I said we can't go at hospitality with an agenda, because it actually ceases to be sincere when we do that. We're not really loving the person, we're trying to accomplish a task. I hope I can get this out of that person. You know, put a badge or a stamp on. Instead of, the actual motivation needs to be to love that person. And so love must be sincere or genuine, that your care is for the person, not to accomplish a task or to get a check mark in your workbook or get a badge on your sash. I've helped a senior across the street, now I can move to the next level. It's not that. Love must be sincere. Romans 12, 9. Okay. What else? Okay. Fulfill their needs and not ours. Good.
It's generated from love received.
Interesting. What do you mean?
First John. We love because he first loved us.
Right.
have not, in some shape or form, received love from others, we are not able to even give love.
Right. So we're going to talk about a uniqueness of Christian love that is fostered in this gospel community. And Sunday morning, again, this is what we're going to talk about. How the gospel, then, hospitality is actually all about the gospel. We have been and received hospitality from the Father, and so are called to extend this hospitality to other people. We've been extended grace, so we extended grace. And this is a picture for sure. Anyone else? What else should love look like in the community of believers? Practical things. I'm looking for practical ways.
Shows no favoritism.
Ah, that's a 1 Corinthians 13 one. Good. That was a hint. You can also go there.
Respect.
Okay, respect. Good, that's very good. 1 Corinthians 13 is not a marriage chapter, just so you know. 1 Corinthians 13 is about life in the church. Good.
It addresses actual needs, not necessarily felt needs.
Interesting, okay. You've thought about this. This is good. I'm glad you've thought about this as the pastor, yeah?
Because you will run into people who, you get the sense they express themselves as very needy, but can easily become a codependent relationship where they latch themselves onto you excessively, even. You know, constantly get phone calls and, you know, that need for attention, but ultimately they don't want them to be dependent on you, right? So their real need is beyond the, you know, reasonable human relationship, but you want to connect them with God.
Mm.
Because you cannot fill that need that they feel, right?
Yeah.
Unless God is in the picture.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point.
I also want to say something about urban. The challenge with hospitality in the urban setting is there's the fear what the stranger is like and what he might do to you. It's more so prevalent in the city. Because you don't know that. We had this homeless person, or he pretended to be homeless, and I invited him into the house while my wife was gone. This was when we had little kids. And when she found out later, was how could you? How could you put our kids at risk like that? You don't know what he might have done. That's sometimes a concern in people's minds when it comes to a stranger. Inviting them into the safe space of your own home, making it possibly unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so, not so much in the rural setting. Because whoever the stranger is usually a newcomer to the place and not, you know, the odd...
drifter. Yeah, drifter or whatever, yeah.
So
we need to acknowledge the fact that hospitality, the reason I titled it Are You Crazy, is actually because it is nuts to do. You're trying to interact with someone you don't know at all. So hospitality is, first off, never, ever, ever convenient. True hospitality will likely rarely be convenient. So you're not prepared for it. When we see pictures of hospitality, they often happen in spontaneity. And they happen when it becomes an inconvenience or you're interrupted. So true hospitality is not going to be something that is either easy or convenient. And so we need to get that out of the way before we go too much further. But in the definition part, is love always easy or convenient?
No,
it's not. So when you go to 1 Corinthians and you read, why would love need to be patient? Because people are annoying. Correct? And so within body life, what we've learned is to patiently be with one another, to endure differing opinions, to bear with different personalities and strong personalities on end of spectrums. And so within body life, though, we do this because of a unity that we found in Christ, which then we are called to extend out to the outsider, who is also God is desiring to extend grace to. But we have learned to love and to bear with one another, which is never easy. And so this is why I say that hospitality's training ground is the church. And when we learn to do that, we're willing to take the risk to go to the next level because we realize the inconvenience is part of God's design and part of God's plan to extend love first to each other and then to others outside as well. So let's move past the love thing. I want to just touch a little bit on what is the purpose of hospitality. What can be accomplished? Let's brainstorm for a little bit with each other. What can be accomplished through hospitality? Go at your tables. What can be accomplished through hospitality? What do you think? Scribble a few things down for me. Let me ask the question in a different way. Maybe this will prompt you to think a little differently. What can be accomplished in hospitality that a program cannot accomplish? Go. All right, what do you got? What can be accomplished? Just brainstorm and dream with me. What could be accomplished through hospitality that maybe you couldn't do in a program? What's that? Say it again.
We want to hear the ones that were laughing over there.
Yeah, oh yeah, okay. Let's hear it. What was so funny? I feel like a teacher here now. Like, pass the note up here. Come on, you guys. Anybody. Okay. Vacuuming is hilarious, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were going to say it sucks. I wasn't sure. Okay. Good one. Anyone else? What can be accomplished through hospitality? If you were to just dream with me for a second.
Well, if we're loving strangers and we get to know strangers, they cease to be strangers and friendships develop.
Amen. So
it could get easier.
It will get easier.
It could get harder.
It could. Yeah.
It depends on your experience that you have. So that was something that we talked about.
One of my hopes and prayers actually for this weekend together is just to get our eyes open to hospitality. Because when our eyes are open, we'll be watching for it. So Marcia and I, when we started talking about this and started studying it and asking questions, and we need to learn hospitality. I don't know if you started praying that we would learn hospitality, but all of a sudden, it was just constantly people at our house. Constantly. And we're starting to think like, okay, we're studying this. We're supposed to do something. Wait, I can't ignore it anymore. And that's actually my goal for you, is that you can't ignore the opportunities that are likely already there, but you've been pushing them off as either somebody else's responsibility or a program's job, or they'd fit great in the kids' program, instead of like, hey, there's a young couple. Let's have them over. Let's get to know them. Let's extend love to them instead of inviting just to a program. And so that's sort of what my hope is that we'll recognize through hospitality an individual responsibility for the life of another. That's what hospitality is all about. It's not a collective program of the church. It's an individual responsibility for the life and well-being of another. We learn that in body life. We learn that in family life. Mom and dads understand the care for the children, correct? But children also understand their responsibility to the family. And then in the body life, it's the same thing within the church. And so the individual responsibility for the life of another. So what else? What else could happen if we were hospitable people?
Eventually we plant a seed for Christ.
Good. Good. Yep. That's pretty great love that we'd be able to share Jesus with somebody that doesn't know Jesus. Yep. So why, let's examine this together. With that question in mind, what can be accomplished through hospitality? We also need to look at why it was so important to the church. And so brainstorm with me. Let's go to Romans 12, and we're going to read some of the passages on hospitality. And then I want to expand from them for a little bit. So you were already there, Romans 12, but let's read 9 to 13 together. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil, hold fast to what is good, love one another with brotherly affection. There's the one another in the context. And I love this one, outdo one another in showing honor. There's competition in the church. Yeah, I love more than the other person. That's not what he's getting at. But he's saying it's strive or build on each other's love to go a step further and further and further. Do not be slothful in zeal. What does slothful mean? Don't be lazy with this. Don't be lazy in love. In the same way, when you compare this, for instance, let's say to 2 Thessalonians, be busy with your own hands rather than being a busybody. Getting involved in everyone else's business just for the sake of getting involved in other people's business. That's what often happens when you're not busy, you become a busybody. And so the call from Paul here is that they would be not be lazy, but busy about their individual responsibility to one another in loving each other and serving one another. Be fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, be consistent in prayer. Those are three things that we're definitely going to need if we're going to do the next part. Continue or contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. So it takes the life of the saints and then it extends that a step further and he says, and continue to show hospitality. Make sure that you're extending this love to people that you don't know that are outside of your regular sphere. And people that are in need of help here. Good. So let's go to a different one with me, if you could. maybe this is a familiar one to you. Hebrews chapter chapter 13. And we're going to be running 2. Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. Again, in the same context as the command, or the command to practice hospitality, the writer of Hebrews includes in there brotherly love again. So the training ground for this type of love, make sure that your brotherly love is intact. It is continuing. Don't neglect to show hospitality. Why? Or hospitality to strangers, or love to strangers to strangers, which is interesting. Don't forget to show love to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. I like that. We're going to talk about one of the benefits of showing hospitality as that. We're going to come and explain that passage just a little bit. I want to take you to two others. First is 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3. Anyone know what that passage is about? Pastor Josh?
No.
No? Okay. It's about elders in the church. One of the qualifications for an elder in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, or those who had responsibility in church leadership, was a demand or a command. Paul tells Timothy, make sure that your elders are hospitable people. Now, why would it be important for church leadership to have a spirit of hospitality? You'd think Bible knowledge would be on the list. It's not. Able to teach is, but a degree is also not part of it. What is part of the qualifications for spiritual leadership within the church?
To be relational.
Be relational. Good.
Set an example.
In what ways? If you were to breeze through this passage in 1 Timothy 3, what kind of things?
Above reproach.
Ooh, a good reputation. Pretty important.
Blameless,
honest in their business dealings, their children respect them. Do you see it? The layers there? They have a reputation in the community, but there's a love within the home that's intact. The relationship with his wife and his relationship with his children is good. And then extended out from there, his reputation in the community and in the church is good. He's honest. He's good in his business dealings. And then from there, there's also this command, be hospitable. Make sure that outsiders are invited into this. Why? Because the example that the spiritual leader is supposed to have is on full display within the home. It's on full display within the home. How this man treats his wife. How this man treats his children. How his children respect him. Has he been honest on his farm? Is he hardworking? Is he a good man? So all the qualifications for elders are vitally important, because Paul is instructing them then to go and talk to somebody who doesn't know anything about Jesus. Are they going to want to get to know Jesus by the reputation that that person has? And so it's a command for spiritual leaders on purpose to be hospitable also, because you're inviting them into an experience with Jesus that touches all parts of life. Go over a couple more chapters to 1 Timothy chapter 5. This is also something that's interesting Paul addresses here. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Verse 9 and 10. What's going on here? So, let a widow... So what had happened in the early church, there was a number of people that needed help. There's a number of people that needed financial help and looking after. And Paul then gives some qualifications for who should be looked after and who shouldn't. So 1 Timothy 5, 9 and 10, it says this, let a widow be enrolled in this program of care. If she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, and having a reputation for good works, if she has brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. How many of you are thinking like, uh-oh, I wouldn't qualify for this program? These are people of, in Paul's mind, women of renown that needed to be honored in a unique way. I really like that. And one of the qualifications of that was hospitality. So let me ask you why. Why would hospitality be one of the qualifications for godly women?
Because
Good. I agree 100%. Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, in this context, in the verses, it's also bringing out widows that might need financial means of support.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're including the 60 and over, correct?
Yep.
Be there for them financially.
You're touching on it. You're so close. Why support these women financially? Is their ministry done because they're 60 years old and a widow? Their ministry is just getting started. They have something to offer. Paul's going to tell Titus, let the older women in your congregation develop the younger women. Invite them into your homes. Teach them to raise their children. Teach them what it is to honor a husband. Make sure that they know how to live honestly, respectfully, with dignity and with power and with purpose. And so it was a way to encourage actually the furthering of ministry of the church through the support of these women. Now, it's financial support to care for them, but it's also, there was a proven track record in these older men as elders, 1 Timothy 3, and older women, there was a proven track record in their life that they were faithful with what they had for the love of the church, for the love of their family, and for the love of strangers. And in that way, that was meant to be honored and esteemed in the church, that the ministry would continue through these people. So when I look at our congregation that's gathered here, there's gray hair, correct? Your ministry is just getting started. It is. And I believe through the ministry of hospitality, you have something to offer a younger generation and other people that young people cannot offer. They can't. They don't understand the purpose of hospitality. They don't understand also instruction, and they haven't lived the same amount of life. So part of hospitality is the sharing of your life with another. And that way, you have a ministry through something like hospitality where you can invite people into your home, where you can invite people into your own life to share life with them so that you will bless and your life will instruct and bless and guide and bring people into a relationship with Jesus. And I'm really praying that that would happen. I think that's an exciting thing for all of you, that your ministry is not done. This would look different for young people. Hospitality is a call for all believers, but uniquely a responsibility, I think, in a strange way, for those who have a little more gray hair.
I have a question. You spoke about young people. My daughter's in Toronto. She does the subway there, and there's so much stuff that happens there. Like, unless we're going to be hospitable only at certain times, like, I don't know how we tell her. Like, she just sits in the back, so she doesn't get shoved onto the train. Is it stabbing every station, everything there? How do you undo the damage of society, what they push on our young people? Because we're not really part of like Toronto or Vancouver for lifestyle, but the subways are so dangerous. And our young people are taught to be so careful and not hospitable.
Do you think hospitality, let's say in the Bible, was safe?
No.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so either. But again, it doesn't mean that we're not going to have some hurdles to overcome. And I agree with you 100%. One of the fears, I don't want to go, you're stealing my thunder. Here. In our session after lunch, we're going to look at what is the hang-ups to hospitality. So we're going to get there. Can you bear with me for a little bit? We're going to look at the hang-ups. What's stopping us from being hospitable? And we're going to see things like fear and pride and selfishness and all these different things. But how do we then overcome it is going to be the second part of our session this afternoon. So we will get to it, I promise. If I don't, you can have a public stoning in the parking lot with whatever with whatever rocks you can find out there. You go ahead and you stone me. So make sure we answer your question. I promise we'll get to it, though. Thank you.
Can I throw a little bit of a curveball here?
Yeah.
Is it helpful to use the word ministry when it comes to things like that?
Like hospitality? Just life, yeah.
Because ministry, just like programs, is something you pick up and that you can drop off if you choose to. This is not not the way that Paul talks about these things.
Yeah, you're right. I think when we look at the... I think what ministry does is it gives us an excuse. Well, I'm not in a certain position. I'm not paid or employed to do this job. I don't have a position in the church or responsibility on a committee.
Job, you know? Again, yeah. That's another word, a job. It's something you go to a certain time of the day, and when you're done, well, the job is done, and now I get to relax. I mean, the hospitality mostly happens during times where you're not, in that sense, on a job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
If anything, that list expresses just where those individuals are at in their personal spiritual character and maturity, right? And,
yep.
And that's what qualifies them, you know, to then also receive assistance, because he doesn't want, you know, help that can be given to be wasted. On people who just, you know, take, but, you know, aren't really a conduit.
Let's bridge it. We're going to come back now, because I think I'm going to skip a few points and come to you, what you're talking about. One of the things that hospitality offers the church is an opportunity to practice spiritual gifts outside of the five programs that the church offers. Okay, so if I'm not a pastor, I'm not a worship leader, I'm not a Sunday school teacher, I'm not the bookkeeper, and I'm not an elder, what do I do? How do I serve or minister in the church? Where do my gifts fit? And I think when you look at the list of gifts, interestingly enough, in the context of, let's say, Romans 12 is a good place. Romans 12, the context of Romans 12 is spiritual gifts. How should the body, the church, exist together? And right in the middle of that, it plugs in hospitality. So the church is also not, like, the gathering of believers on Sunday morning is not the only place that spiritual gifts are exercised. Many of the spiritual gifts, things like mercy, things like service, things like giving, are often done and can be done in the context of your own home and just regular life. They can be done to build up, though, to build up the church and to build up other believers and unbelievers into Christ. So it's a great conduit to go about practicing spiritual gifts that maybe you've never got to practice because you're not a pastor. And so I think you're bang on there that sometimes we need to, I'm reluctant to just throw terms out, but ministry is basically the pointed purpose task. And sometimes maybe we've allowed it to be an excuse. Well, I'm not in that ministry. I'm not involved in that ministry. And you're right. What Paul is getting at and what Peter's going to get at, let's go to 1 Peter chapter 4. What they're both going to get at is that this is part of just everyday life as you're farming. So when you read the Great Commission, it says, therefore go and make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father. A good translation there is that as you're going, make disciples. It's not saying go into a ministry that is making disciples. It's just saying as you're going through life, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them. And so this is going to be their interaction. For 1 Peter chapter 4, and start in verse 7, actually, maybe it'd be better. Now, we get a little stern warning from Peter. The end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be steadfast, or self-controlled, sober-minded, for the sake of your prayers. Above all, keep on loving, again, we see it, one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. And then it says, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Why would Peter have to add that? Anyone feel that way about hospitality? I want your honest opinion. I do. I asked this to, was it third-year students at Miller? And there was a few girls that just like, I don't want to. I really don't want to. People are frustrating. I want to escape. My home is my place of refuge. Ugh. Why would Peter need to add that?
Because he knows the human spirit.
And it's to do what? What is he addressing there? What makes you grumble? Wives, talk about your husband's grumbling. Husbands, don't you dare talk about your wife's grumbling. Don't. As a table, I want you to brainstorm for a little bit. What makes you grumble? What makes you grumble?
Selfish.
All right. I'm going to ask your opinions here in a second, but I want to preface, before we say what makes us grumble, I'm going to say that one of the purposes of hospitality and one of the great benefits of hospitality when we start to practice it is that it has a lot to do with our sanctification. It's going to develop your faith in a unique way that other things can't. So what happens, the first thing that's going to happen when you start to practice hospitality is your heart's going to be revealed. And that's exactly what Peter's getting at. So start to do it without grumbling, because grumbling is going to reveal something wrong in our heart. So let me ask you, when do you start grumbling? When what happens?
Inconvenience.
Yeah. How dare you? I catch myself doing this regularly. I get home Sunday afternoon. Finally, get to sit on the couch. Long morning. Can't wait to have my nap. Ding dong. Ugh. Who is it? And I literally grumble because I've been interrupted. Or the phone rings. Is it Linda again? Right? And I catch myself saying those things audibly. And it's something that I've started to display to my children. And so I've come to realize, boy, my action reveals something in my heart that's not quite right. Okay? What else do we grumble about?
3 o'clock in the morning, the trucks go roaring by as fast.
The rudeness of others, eh? Okay? I think it's... Go ahead.
Things that are out of control in your life that you can't control.
Mm. Interesting.
The annoying habits of people.
The annoying...
Or when people don't do or what they said they would do or should do or they do what they couldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I agree. If only we had people to do what I told them to do. How much better would life be? How many people grumble when someone makes you wait? Ooh. All the husbands are like, I'm going to shut up. Okay? Yeah. I think there's things that hospitality is going to develop. Something like patience. Does hospitality always accomplish something? Well, why didn't this person get saved? I had them over for a meal. Why didn't they come to Christ? You know, like, hospitality, for instance, is a long program. It might be a one-off, but more than likely, and sometimes great and miraculous things happen, but sometimes in the Christian faith, things take time. And God sometimes asks us to be inconvenienced, sometimes inconvenienced for a long period of time, sometimes just to put aside our own preferences. And sometimes we're going to talk about this afternoon. One of the things that gets in the way sometimes of practicing hospitality are simple things like dietary restrictions. I don't want to have that person over. They have too many allergies. I don't even know what I'd cook. I'd probably kill them anyway. So why would I have them over? And so there's all sorts of things in our culture that actually make it hard, because I'm going to have to give up. I was going to cook an apple pie, and they don't like apple pie. Forget it. You can stay home. You know, but at the heart, we grumble because of why?
Because we have too much.
Interesting.
You know, when I think of our years, I come from a big family, and we went to church, and we never had all this TV and stuff like that, you know. And my parents had people over all the time. That was something you did. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that anymore now. That's all. We go out for dinner on Sunday, and that's where we do our visiting, and then that's finished.
Okay.
You know, I miss those parts that where we would get together, the family, and we have too many of these little gadgets that people are just laying on. And yes, we have too much of that junk. I call it junk.
I would agree. So there we're going to have something that we've become very selfish with our time.
That's
correct?
Right.
Okay. So we're going to talk about that. One of the things that I'm giving all my stuff away for this afternoon. So I hear your grumbling. Thank you. Young whippersnappers with their doodads and okay. I will leave my phone in my pocket from now on. You're right. You're right though. We have very little time. At the core, I'm gonna say, which we're gonna talk about this afternoon, at the core, our selfishness is revealed. Our own pride and our own selfishness is revealed. And so part of our sanctification is God allowing us to see clearly the condition of our heart, actually. And so then to allow the word to start to wash our selfishness, to our pride and our jealousy or envy. Well, why would I have that person over there? They have a nicer house than I do. Where's that coming from? And what's stopping us there is actually a jealousy. And so we can have all these different things. So in sanctification, I just want to stop there. God is shaping you through hospitality. It's giving of yourself. It's willing to sacrifice. It's willing to be inconvenienced. Because rarely is God going to call you to beach ministry. There's the ministry word. Beach ministry in Hawaii. That's super easy. Has any ministry or any bit of gospel work for Christ, is it promised to be easy? None of it. And so let's get that through our head that in this process then of being sanctified is also hospitality is good for us. It reveals the condition of our heart and helps us to work through and to pray through and to want to grow in our faith. Sometimes we're going to be asked questions we don't have answers to. We're going to face problems that we don't know. We're going to come into situations where I don't have the resources. It helps us to understand our connection to other people. And where I can't do it all on my own, I might need help. And so a dependence on the Lord, all of these things are good for our spiritual development, our sanctification. And I really think hospitality has a unique role to play there. Anyway, let's go back to our papers. What other things do you think can be accomplished through hospitality? Sure, it is being set apart. So there's two parts to it. First of all, we are set apart by Christ, right? Jesus took us and made us holy, or set us apart for himself. We became his holy people. The church are that because of what Jesus did. But there's a second part to sanctification, that we're being made more like Jesus. We're being made more holy or more unique. So God is shaping us to be more like Jesus through hospitality. So let's look at the life of Jesus in that mindset just for a little bit. How did Jesus operate with other people?
He walked
among them. Bingo. Was it always easy? Nope. So here's a weird question. Was Jesus hospitable? Didn't have a house. Was Jesus hospitable? Why? Good answer, but why? He loved strangers, loved them. And there was times where he escaped, great crowd pressed in around him, and then he escaped by himself and he'd pray. And then he'd come back and the people would press in and they'd question him and some people hated him and then he would go off by himself to pray or decompress with the disciples and he'd spend Sunday morning with some other, other friends or whatever. Then he'd go into a meal, and then he'd heal people, and then he'd feed 5,000 people. He was hospitable. I mean, he could just say, okay, here's a meal for 5,000, right? And maybe you're not in that position right now. But he was, in a very practical way, he cared for the needs, the physical needs, the well-being. He healed people. He bound up wounds. He cared for the emotional and physical and emotional needs. For instance, something like a leper who is a complete outsider from all of society. There are so many times where it uses these little words, Jesus touched them. That's huge. That is a huge thing that we often breeze over in hospitality. And a love for a stranger was just the simple act of being touched. That's incredible. And so we have these little pictures. Jesus was hospitable. And so in the same way, sanctification is to be set apart to be more like Christ. Christ is an example that we're called to follow. But we have all sorts of different hang-ups that get in the way of that. We have our pride and our selfishness. And so one of the ways that God intends to make his people holy, first off in the Old Testament, was through the law. So the law gave God's holy people, the people that God had rescued from Egypt and brought out to be his holy people, they didn't want to always live the way that God wanted them to live, correct? But God made it really clear through the law, here is how my people ought to live. So we want you to treat one another in this way. We want you to love and pursue justice. When somebody wrongs you, this is what is meant to happen. When somebody has a skin disease and is an outcast, let's make sure that they can go through a process and get clean and then find a way to come back together. So you have all these weird laws, but it's a way that God called his holy people to operate that represented him well. So it represented things like love and charity and justice and care and mercy. And there was all sorts of great pictures in the law. And then in the New Testament, we come along. Now we were set apart as God's holy people. And he still intends for his holy people to represent him well. And so part of our sanctification is to learn to be God's holy people, unique from the rest of our society. And I'm going to tell you that hospitality is grossly countercultural today. Our culture, especially in North America, is individualistic, right? It's your life, do what you want to do. You go to the privacy of your home, and we're good with that. But what Jesus is actually calling us to is to be countercultural in the sense that our life is meant to touch the life of somebody else. So get out of your house. And so he's telling us to be countercultural, to love in the way that the rest of the world doesn't understand love, to abhor what is evil, to cling to what is good, Romans 9, to practice your spiritual gifts, to extend mercy, to love in very countercultural ways. And so he's actually calling us to something that is very unique for his people here. And it's going to be more and more unique in our individualistic culture if we're willing to do that within our own homes. And so this is going to be increasingly... Now, would you acknowledge that there's cultures in the world that do hospitality better than ours? Can you name one? I will commend the Mennonite culture for this. Okay, the Mennonite culture is incredibly hospitable. And we see that in its care for widows and older people and their care for one another, and their interactions are often bent that way. So, but are there other cultures that you just kind of come to understand that, hey, they get this whole hospitality thing?
Cultures or religions?
Or religions, sure. Give me either one. Okay.
Philippians, they have a lot of respect for their elders and their parents. They live with them, they take good care of them, and they're amazing in the health field when they come to our country to work, like loving.
I agree, and Filipino culture is interesting because they do everything together. Like everything. Like, oh, someone's having a birthday? There's 75,000 people together. Everyone brings five different dishes, and yeah, they just get that, okay?
A lot of the Middle Eastern cultures are very hospitable.
Yep.
I mean, I'm partially relying on the witness of others who've gone to places like Turkey, and you're treated like a family member, even though they don't even know you, and put a feast
yep.
on the table for you. And we had one Muslim, former Muslim man in Edmonton. Brought us a whole platter of Middle Eastern food that lasted us a whole week. It's amazing when you just met him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's also because it's, I think, ingrained in many Muslim cultures that you feel like you're obligated to, at least for one day, even have someone sleep in your home without question.
Yep. Now, there is something that we call a hot and cold climate. Now, it's literally, usually there's a dividing line between cold climates, so European and into Canada and North America. And then there's warm climates where you get into the Middle East and into South America. And often the warmer climates are very relational, whereas the colder climates are very individualistic. It's just because we have winter, maybe, part of it, where we get stuck in our homes. But other parts, it's just the way that they do family and community. It just looks different. So we need to understand some cultural differences, for sure. However, within that, often warmer climates deal with something called honor and shame. And the biblical pictures we're going to look at here, too, honor and shame become a big part of this. Our family honor is to care for, and we take responsibility for other people. That was a big honor thing. And we don't claim that as with as much pride in our culture today. So something like the Muslim culture, honor is built up in what I can offer others. By my wealth, I can bless others. And so this whole idea of honor is also wrapped up in protection and care, and reputation is massive here. And we don't have the same care about reputation today, but I think biblically we should. And so in some ways, I think the countercultural part, I don't want to get too sidetracked with this, because I think hospitality actually transcends all cultures. It's Some people get it more naturally because it's continued to be part of their culture, but it's still a call for all people, and in all ages, doesn't matter what demographic, where you live, your how much money you have, any of those different things. I think hospitality really transcends all of those things. I want to give you another blessing of hospitality. So number one, it's going to work out your salvation. It's going to work on your relationship with Jesus. It's going to work on the condition of your heart, sanctification, what his holy people are supposed to be like. Number two, it's going to actually bring mutual blessing. Let's go back to that passage in Hebrews chapter 13. You would assume that in hospitality, it's my job to bless the other person, correct? My job to bless the other person. But what does the writer of Hebrews say? Practice hospitality, for in some doing, some have entertained angels. Now, the writer of Hebrews also makes it really clear what angels are. Are not all angels ministering spirits sent by God to minister to the saints? And I really believe that maybe this literally happens, where it's an angel. But maybe the whole idea of a ministering spirit, I think the word for angel or messenger could also transcend into people that God has just ordained to be in your presence that were actually through hospitality. I don't know about you, but if I'm extending hospitality to the people of my church, I know most of them aren't angels. Correct? Do you know that most of the people that you know already aren't angels? So the extension of hospitality to the people that you don't know what you're getting. I don't know if I'm going to be a blessing to them or if God's been sent them to me to be a blessing to me. See what I mean? So there's a blessing in hospitality that you're actually inviting an opportunity for the Lord maybe to minister to you. So don't start thinking that, well, I'm in a really low state right now. I'm not doing very good. I don't have very much money. I don't have this. I don't have that. I'm kind of discouraged. I'm frustrated. Don't use those as excuses not to practice hospitality. In fact, go out and do it. So if maybe for a time you're lonely, good time to practice hospitality. We have an RCMP couple in our church who, of course, is going to move around. And I don't think they're ever going to be lonely because they're hospitable people. And God brings them into relationship. They extend hospitality to their neighbors, the new people that they meet in church. There's people always in their home. And often they're ministered to by the people that come into their home. There's unique relationships that start through this interaction with other people. And ministering spirits, in the sense, it might be a literal angel. It might be people that God sends as messengers to encourage you, to uplift you, or maybe to support you through hospitality. So let's go to a couple passages, and maybe you know the story, maybe you don't. Two of them, where this literally happened in the Old Testament. Does anyone know where we're going to go? Abraham, bingo. Genesis 18. And then in the very next chapter, it happens again. Genesis 18, there's men come walking over the hill, Abraham standing there, and he goes out to greet them, come in, have a meal with me, do all these different things, and then this angel, messenger, comes and interacts with Abraham and gives them the promise that this time when we return next year, you're going to have a son, and Sarah laughs, and we have all this other interaction. But through that, then, these men are fed, and he goes through this whole process of Middle Eastern hospitality. Come in, I'll wash your feet, I'll give you something to eat. And it's actually, Genesis 18 is the first fast food experience. Abraham tells Sarah, go and butcher a goat and cook some bread and do everything. And then the next verse it says, and they ate. So it was super quick. And so they did this, they provided the needs of these people. And as they're going, God, the angels, God himself says, I'm going on to Sodom and Gomorrah, I'm going to destroy the city. Should I hide this from Abraham? So not only did Abraham receive a blessing from God, you're going to receive a son by this time next year, a re-emphasizing of the covenant, the encouragement to just keep going. Sometimes we just need that in our faith, don't we? And through hospitality, sometimes we just get that little word of encouragement that we needed. It's just like, yes, I can serve the Lord. And maybe the Lord's encouraging you through the life of this other person in this interaction. There's another part, though, that we're invited into an opportunity to see what the Lord is already doing. The Lord intended to go to Sodom to destroy it. And what did Abraham do?
He pleads for the city if there's so many righteous people
there. Yeah. He starts to intercede on behalf of his nephew Lot. He says, if you have 50 people there, would you still destroy the city? Well, no, if there's 50 people there, I wouldn't distribute. Well, how about 40? Reminds me of a good Mennonite joke. Here we go. You ready? This Mennonite boy comes to his dad and says, "Dad, I need $20 to go with the youth group on this trip." And the Mennonite dad says, $10? What do you need $5 for?" And Abraham did that with this messenger. And I think if we get a lesson from that, I think when we have an opportunity to interact with somebody, we get to see what God's doing in a person's life. And he gives us the unique opportunity to intercede or to play a part in, whether it be intercede in prayer or to step into the gap and to fight on behalf of someone who is facing some obvious difficulty and destruction. But I think what we're brought into is the blessing of God's understanding what God's doing in the life of other people. And so Abraham intercedes, the visitors continue on to Sodom and Gomorrah. And what happens in Sodom and Gomorrah? Chapter 19. Yeah, so they're in the city, and we have, again, a very Middle Eastern custom. They didn't have hotels in the same sense, so to stay in the city square would have been atrociously dangerous. And so Lot comes and demands that they come into his house. Come and stay with me, come and stay with me, come and stay with me. So through this offering of hospitality, I think it's divine, that they come into Lot's home. And what happens? What's going on outside the doors? And maybe no one wants to talk about this, but it's in the Bible. Give us these men. We want to sleep with them. It's disgusting. Does this sound like our culture today? Surrounding our homes and surrounding the outside is just destruction, things that are disgusting to the Lord, deplorable to the Lord. But inside the home is the place where there is this mutual blessing. So Lot was blessing these strangers by offering them a place of safety, but Lot was also given instruction on how to avoid the destruction of the city. So sometimes I think, maybe it's not literally, hey, well, Humboldt's going to be drowned in a flood. You need to escape, build an ark. No, that may not be what's happening. But maybe there's a word of warning that you're going to get through an interaction of other people with somebody else. Or maybe it's just through this interaction with a stranger for the very first time that you might get this opportunity to see or catch a glimpse of something you need to be aware of. So these messengers then give Lot the warning and how to avoid the destruction of Sodom. Go and flee. Take your sons, your daughters, your wife, and don't look back. And of course, Lot's wife looks back. But these messengers then go about their ministry. But I think through hospitality, I know it sounds silly, but through hospitality we see a mutual blessing. Two other examples of that are Elijah and Elisha. Right? We see. We're going to pick that up later on. But Elijah and Elisha are another good example. So a widow takes in Elijah. Says, "I don't have anything left. I got a little bread, a little oil, a little flour, a little oil." And he says, "Well, make a cake for me, and then the Lord will bless you. The Lord won't let that oil run out and that flour run out." And so there's a mutual blessing that through the entertaining the love of another person, that person then provided the needs of that. So there's mutual blessing. Last one before we break for lunch. You guys need a break. Your minds are shot. I can tell already. The last one I'm going to say is it brings us into kingdom partnerships, into opportunities to extend God's work outward. This is a good example. We stayed with Arnold and Lorna. We came here to speak. They offered us hospitality. That's a daring thing when someone's going to come and talk about hospitality. You better be on your game, right? You better be on your game. You vacuum. Good work. Good work. Yeah. Arnold's thinking, "You never vacuum. Company needs to come more often." Oh, man. Sorry, no. But through that extension of hospitality, it makes it possible to come and to do ministry here. Now, you could have put me in a hotel. Would it have been the same for you guys? Would it have been the same if you would have just put us up in a hotel? No, why not? I'm really digging for a compliment here.
Well, there's mutual blessing in being together. Mm-hmm. That's what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the house got back.
I think there's something unique, yep.
There's also made a disconnect for you.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Well, classifying almost as an inconvenience,
we have a lot of modern conveniences. I'm going to give you two that I want to interact with a little bit. Can you practice hospitality in a restaurant?
Sure.
To some extent, sure. Can you be hospitable and provide a hotel for somebody?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. You're starting to think correctly about hospitality. Hospitality is not just confined to what can I do with my house. Hospitality is a mindset. Okay. Hospitality is a way of looking at the world, and we're going to look at that this afternoon. But this part of, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I've been thinking about that a lot. Like Jesus went to the home of Simon the leper. Hospitality, we can demonstrate that in many ways. People's needs aren't necessarily just met by how we can supply those needs. We can provide hospitality by accepting hospitality.
Bingo. I know a few people that don't actually like being asked out. They'd much rather have somebody into their home. And that can be as much of a pride thing as anything else. It can be an unwillingness to receive hospitality is actually reveals a bit of the condition of the heart too. And so anyway, that's something we're going to talk about this afternoon as well. But this whole idea of extending kingdom work, is it frees that up. I grew up in a missionary home. And I remember thinking, when my parents went from place to place raising support, we'd stay in these people's homes, and they never had toys, they never had nothing. It was brutal. And we went from place to place, and my parents had so many people that they knew. We didn't have to go anywhere. Sometimes there were third cousins, sometimes there were people that they just met. But we stayed in so many people's homes, and I remember just thinking, this is ridiculous. This is weird. But it's the only way that my parents did ministry. They were supported financially by these people, and so they would go and interact with them, and sometimes it was just, all it was just a place to stay so that they could go to the church the next day and talk about the mission that they were going to be involved in and then to go on. And I came to realize later, and as we were studying this paper, I came to really appreciate the depth of those kingdom partnerships. They weren't the ones doing the missionary work, but they were directly involved. If you want proof of how that happened in the early church, read any of Paul's letters. Any of Paul's letters are written to specific churches, and very often specific people are mentioned in his letters. Thank so-and-so, greet so-and-so, because he had specific interactions with them. And some of those we're going to talk about tomorrow morning. And so the early church spread that way. Paul's ministry went that way. Elijah and Elisha operated that way. Elisha also in 1 Kings chapter 4, this wealthy woman puts together a room. So whenever he's in the area doing ministry, come to my house, you can stay with me, and then go out from there and do your ministries. We still have relationships with people in our former church that if I'm going to go to that area and visit other people, it's just, yeah, you got a place to stay, no problem. We're going to be loved, we're going to be looked after, we're going to be cared for, we're going to be asked questions about our life and our children. And hospitality has developed kingdom partnerships that are much bigger than just here, and it brings us into a big picture of the church, how the church is supposed to operate. My dad has dementia now. And he talks regularly about the people that supported them 30 years ago, 40 years ago. If there's people that he remembers, it's the partners that were with them in ministry. And I think that's so unique. I think it's so cool. Some of them, all they did was, we were maybe in their house twice. But sometimes we got prayer letters. Sometimes we got encouragement, care packages, you know, all sorts of different things. But it opened the door for kingdom partnerships and ministry to continue on. I'm going to stop because they're scrambling around for lunch. So are there questions? Are there things that this has got your mind going that you're like, I hope we address this? I don't want to rush too far.
Just a theological question. Because it came up last Sunday. Does the end of Matthew 25 address ministry done unto Christians when it talks about what you've done to the least of these?
To Christians? I would actually say that...
Who are the least of his brethren? That's the question that arises. And how is that so important that it becomes a critical judgment criterion?
Right.
Of whose sheep that may go.
Right. But
because it's indirectly done unto Jesus, right?
Yeah.
What you've done to them or one of them, you've done to me.
Right. Now, I think the unique part of that passage would be the fact that they didn't know. Many of them are like, well, when did we do that? And so there was an, whether it be with Christians or not Christians, I don't think is as important as it would have been people least likely to have represented Jesus, right? So there, it was not powerful people. It was not wealthy or healthy people. It was people who were hurting. And so the idea with hospitality and with things like mercy is an inability for reciprocation. So it's a good clarity, because when we talk about mutual encouragement, don't practice hospitality to get something from somebody else. Don't mishear me. But there is mutual blessing, but the people that Jesus commends them for ministering to were people that could not and would not reciprocate. And so in that way, when Jesus says, you did it for me, if they would have done it for Jesus, they would have expected something back from Jesus. But they did it without expecting anything. And in this, that's the same way that Jesus ministered, correct? What could anyone give Jesus? Did anybody give Jesus anything of value?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad no one said no. What kind of things?
Well, the woman who anointed him.
Amen. It's praise and adoration. So we are going to talk about the Simon the Pharisee and that interaction a little bit later too. So good question. The three magi, worship, okay?
Without those gifts, they probably could not have fled to Egypt.
Interesting. So the actual practical needs of those gifts and the prophetic part of it, yeah, it's good.
I don't think, like you're saying hospitality, or not, maybe you're not saying this, but whatever, in my head, that it always has to do with your home. Now, if you say hospitality means love for strangers, that, like, when Daniil has to the school, and they're complete strangers that come into our teams, whatever, there's an opportunity to make them feel comfortable where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
I think it's not just home, it can also be extended.
You're exactly right. We're going to talk about that after lunch a little bit. And so the hint here is, can you practice hospitality in a restaurant? Yeah, partially. So hospitality, I think, finds its pinnacle in the home. I'll put it that way. But hospitality is not confined to the home at all. So that's good. That's a good observation. Thank you. Any other questions, thoughts? Should I pray for lunch? Okay. That was my way of let's get eating. Father, it's been good just to be in your word a little bit and to discuss. And we're asking that you just richly bless this food to our bodies and our conversations together around the table. We ask that you would be honored and glorified in them. Lord, I pray that we would just catch a little bit of vision of what you're doing through the life of us as believers. And would we begin to be excited about what you would accomplish through us. We thank and praise you for everything you do. We thank you for the work that has gone into this meal and the time that we have together. In Jesus' name, amen.